Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you today, and I'm very, very honored to have Steve Bartek on the show. It's kind of hard to describe everything that he does, because he does a lot of different things. Just to give you a quick example, he was originally in the band Strawberry Alarm Clock, played flute for them. He was also in the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo, which also became Oingo Boingo, and that's where he met Danny Elfman. And besides playing guitar and playing in that group, he was also the main orchestrator and for Danny for all of his soundtracks. So all those great soundtracks like Batman or Alice in Wonderland, it's him that did the scoring for it. And he's done a lot of other different things. He does film composing. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a medley of stuff that kind of shows the it's a good indicator of the different things that he does. And I'm going to explain real quick before what they are. I'm going to play a cue from a movie that he did. The movie's called Novocaine. It's called The Solution, and it's orchestra score. So you can hear a little bit of his orchestration. He composed the music. And then I'm going to play two cuts from the extremely goofy movie. And one of them's called Bean Scene, and the other one's called They're Off. And one of them's like a jazz thing, and then there's like a rock thing. So I'm going to play this whole thing. It gives you, this is the best way to kind of describe him, is just by let the music speak. So here, take a listen.
Thank you.
That's a lot of stuff. He just went through a lot of different changes and stuff. Beautiful stuff. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you on the show, Steve.
My pleasure.
And, oh, there we go. I got the wrong mic on. Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
You studied, I was reading your bio, you studied at UCLA.
out of high school, I went to UCLA and got a degree in composition.
Okay. Yeah. And talk a little bit about your influences. I'm going to play some other clips that he's given me. You sent me a bunch of stuff that was really cool because it's really diverse. And I'm curious to see
where I come from?
Yes.
Oh, dear. I mean, growing up, everyone my age grew up inspired by the Beatles to pick mm-hmm. up the guitar and start playing. I was immediately drawn to groups like the Yardbirds and Jeff Beck, who was the big hero as I was growing up, and bands like Love. I lucked out in having the opportunity to write songs with a neighbor that got picked up by the Strawberry Alarm Clock.
Mm-hmm.
I went through a big Charlie Christian, Django Reinhardt phase, which mm-hmm. is kind of a usual guitar growing up kind mm-hmm. of thing. Went out and bought myself an Epiphone Emperor so that mm-hmm. I could, because there was a Django album cover that had mm-hmm. him holding that guitar. So went out and got it.
Is that the one you still have?
That's the one I still have.
Very cool.
It's actually, I did a concert about 4 or 5 years ago of Raymond Scott music mm-hmm. at Red Cat, and I found a D'Armon pickup for my Epiphone that matched it. I'd had a Charlie Christian pickup and mm-hmm. a few other ones that just never sounded good on it, mm-hmm. but this old D'Armon made it sound like an old Emperor.
Oh, very cool.
Should. Anyway, influences. Where can I go from there?
Well, okay. All right. I'm gonna play something, and I'm going to ask you what your influences, because I'll give my opinion. This is your band called Relative.
Oh, good.
Tell me a little bit about this band.
Relative, my wife had been bothering me for years that I should be doing something of my own. So I sat down, wrote a bunch of stuff, and I wanted to put a band together that was interactive, where it was musicians mm-hmm. playing off of each other. And so the stuff I wrote were basically kind of head tunes to get us moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled my favorite, the people I like playing with the most. First, it was John Hernandez, who was just here, and the bass player from Oingo Boingo, John Avila. And John Hernandez had this nephew who played violin, just mm-hmm. amazing. So it started out with the four of us, and I slowly added Sam Phipps from Boingo playing sax, and a guy named Doug Lacey who I had him play accordion, celeste, and woodblocks. Mm-hmm. I had him playing things that were not kind of normal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the band was.
All right, let me play this clip. And again, you're just going to see the palette of music is just extreme, if I can say that. Because you do a lot of different styles, and it's amazing how you master all of them. So this is, and then I'm going to ask you a question about this piece after. Pretty amazing stuff. Now, did you listen to King Crimson?
I remember seeing King Crimson with Adrian Belew at the Roxy.
Okay.
Which is slightly later than the beginning King Crimson.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the vocalist, the bass player who sang?
Well, the first one was Greg Lake.
Yeah,
and
Greg
then
Lake,
eventually it was John Wetton.
Right.
Because this sounded a lot like, I remember Lark's Tongue and Aspect, where he had Eddie Jobson on violin.
That one I did listen to.
Okay, because that's what I was hearing. I'm like, damn. This is really cool. Because you're doing a lot of time signature changes, and you're doing a lot of little complex stuff.
Yeah, I try to keep the other musicians on their toes, which is part of my it's part of my general outlook, even or orchestrating for Danny, is like if the musicians are just sitting there, you know, because there's a repetitive something, but it has to be, I make it so that they're playing off of each other and they have to be listening to each other to make it actually happen. Lately, for that, actually, make sure that there's the violins are on either side and they're answering each other, even though what you're hearing is not a big answer. So this kind of thing is like I had the line and I had the violin answer me later in a slightly different key, just so we'd meet up somewhere.
You had I'm sure you that was the line that you're talking about. That's all that was written out. But how much of that was freeform?
From what you played, that was all written out. After that, we just played.
Oh, okay.
And we that particular cut at the end, we thought we'd ended, but then the bass player kept going a little bit, so I started doing some muted guitars, and then the violinist started playing pizzicato, and so suddenly we were back into something completely different, and on a cue, just we kind of looked at each other, we played the hit one more time and got out. And that was the joy of that band, is that that once we got through what the presentation was, we each had an opportunity to play off of it, play off of each other, which is the joy of the last, I mean, I spent 20 years mostly doing orchestration. The joy of the last 10 years when I started playing guitar is playing with other musicians. It's a complete different world than sitting in your studio laying down tracks for someone or laying down tracks for yourself. It's just to interact live is the joy of why we all started playing in the first place.
Yeah, it's that when it all clicks and you're playing together, it works. Now, let me ask what you were using on Microwave Mush.
Actually, that recording session was at John Avila's house. It wasn't meant to be a recording session. It's a demo. We just wanted to get together and see what we could do, but I kept it. It was my Gibson 145 3/4 with PAF through a Boogie Mark II, which is not the one everybody apparently likes these days. But I had two of those, one for a backup for Boingo, and I don't remember having very many pedals. That was a stage where I was just starting to come back to play, and I didn't want any of this.
Yeah.
I just kind of wanted to go into an amp and...
Just you and the amp.
Me and the amp.
Yeah.
And feel the guitar go through it.
So that sounds like you weren't using any compression or any type of thing. It was just basically direct and just pushing the amp.
Yeah. I don't know. John, actually, Avila... mixed it, so he may have compressed it after the fact, but
but no, it sounds like it's just guitar and
that's all it was meant to be.
Now, you mentioned the Beatles and also Oingo Boingo, so I'm going to play another clip and we'll talk a little bit different sound, but okay. A great lead. This is their version of I Am the Walrus, but this is the lead section of that. Take a listen, it's brilliant, it's great stuff. Here's I Am the Walrus.
Sitting in an English garden waiting for the sun. And if the sun don't come, I'll get a tan from standing in the English rain. I'm the Eggman. They are the Eggman. I'm the Walrus. Coo-coo-coo-choo. Choking smokers, don't you think the Joker laughs at you?
That's great. What you do guitar-wise, you do the little... ho, 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 hee, hee, ha. But those little double bends with the triplets?
I'm glad you like that, because those tickled me. That's why I like playing that song, just so I could do those.
It was very cool. Now, you were using the boogies there?
okay, that period of time, I have a Groove Tubes Triamp. What's it called?
Triaxis?
It's three Groove Tube. Triaxis doesn't sound right.
No, Triaxis was Mesa Boogie. I'm sorry.
No, it's just Groove Tubes had the a preamp, just a preamp, and a Seymour Duncan power amp.
Mm-hmm.
And the Groove Tubes has three channels. One of them's clean. One of them's medium. And I forget exactly what the mm-hmm. technical thing is, but I was using that all the time on stage, and it gave me you kick in something, and I had.
And that was basically used through Oingo Boingo. What did you use guitar-wise?
At that point, I had this.
The Strat.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're using the Strat.
At that point, at this. Before the Strat, I was floundering. On stage, I started out with my Les Paul. I have like a gold-top Les Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a 69 reissue that I got in the 80s. No, in the 70s. It was too heavy for me. After about two tours, my back was killing me. So I got signed up with Carvin,
mm-hmm.
and got a bunch of Carvin guitars.
Yeah.
I swapped out, the electronics I kept swapping out every so often, but it was lighter, and mm-hmm. I could play it.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the live stuff in the middle period, I'm not particularly proud of the sound I had particularly. But once I got back to this...
But in the studio, you're using...
I used my Les Paul. I had a.
Was there any other processing, or was that just the guitar cranked? That's a great sound, but it doesn't sound like you were doing a lot of processing.
No, that's the guitar cranked. The other side is Warren Fitzgerald from the Vandals.
Mm-hmm.
So he when he joined the band last year, he got everybody just feeling like cranking it and I could get away with cranking it. Years before, Danny. He's like, no, it's kind of cute. But that year, those last couple of years, it was like we got to crank, and that's basically what it is. I didn't use much.
Well, that version of I'm the Walrus, it had to be fun to play live because it really kicks. I mean, it's a stomper.
Yeah, and Mark Mann did the horn arrangement for that one.
Oh wow, that's very very cool. Well, I'm gonna play a clip from Oingo Boingo that Steve gave me that's been unreleased, and it's called Vulture. I'm going to play the clip, and then I got a question for you on that one, and you can tell us a little bit about this. This is a very interesting one too. Here's Vulture. Now, we were talking before the show, and it's like, is that real orchestra? You answered it yes.
Yeah, we had for that album, I forget how Danny managed it, but we had a string section and French horns.
Now, who did the arrangement for that?
The French horns and string.
Oh, that's very cool.
I mean, with Danny. I mean, just Danny's ideas, and I made him happen mostly.
Oh, okay.
Mostly.
Well, it's interesting because Mark had done the brass on that other tune.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I suspected so that you had done it, but that's the beginning of that whole collaboration between you and Danny that's been going on now to today.
Yeah. Well, with Danny, it started with Mystic Nights. We did the Forbidden Zone soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And he had come to me because he needed help. He had some song, and he gave me a little orchestra and we went and recorded it before they'd finished the film, and it was just like really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you play live with the Mystic Knights?
Yeah.
Now, how did that differ from Oingo Boingo? I mean, obviously, Oingo Boingo was more rock, more.
Mystic Knights was a theatrical show.
Mm-hmm.
It had a story from the beginning to the end. It started with film clips. We came out in monkey suits and pulled them off and played African balafones, and it was. Loosely a timeline from the history of the universe till the mm-hmm. to the future. So we started out, monkey suits being, evolution. Worked our way through a faux classical piece through 50s. We did I Got a Job, and we did a couple other like 50s kinds of stuff, and then ended up doing a futuristic calypso and Javanese Balinese gamelan, where Danny did a whole dance, not a saber dance, I forget the name of it, in costumes with mm-hmm. with gamelan instruments that were made by Leon the sax player and Danny, as were the African instruments. They were homemade. So that was a whole theatrical thing.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about it is that, much like you say, I'm guilty of it, it transversed a myriad of styles and was a joy to be to play. You know.
But how did you do... Now, you said you had recorded and he brought like a small section in and you did that.
Oh.
But how did you do that live?
The Vultures?
Not Vultures, but I mean, well, I don't. Did you ever do Vultures live?
No, never did.
Yeah, but I mean, like the Mystic Knights.
Oh, the Mystic Knights. We had three saxes. We had everybody kind of moved around and played stuff. Annie played violin and trombone. And
oh, okay. So it was more chamber like it wasn't.
Yeah, no. It was never. A full, I'm sorry. Never a full orchestra. It was this weird little ensemble where everybody kind of moved around and played. Part of the thing Danny developed for the show that we did back then was that certain players he called us virtuosos. So there was a section where the piano player came up and played a Rhapsody in Blue, but another Gershwin thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I came out after a comedian went through a thing because the bass player was a comedian in German. and actually, it was the drummer was the comedian in German. I'd come out and do a Django Reinhardt solo based on a Django Reinhardt improvisation that he had done. But we were in makeup and we mm-hmm. were like completely out. So the show kept evolving, moving from one thing to the other. We'd move things off stage and on stage, and the films would go up. When the films got up, we'd run around backstage and do costume changes because mm-hmm. we'd had to move with the timeline. And it was the kind of show that, from our side, it always felt like it was about to fall apart, and from the audience side, it looked like it was about to fall apart. And that was part of the intrigue and charm of it, is that everybody was hoping it wasn't going to fall apart before the end.
No, and that was from that time when you guys were doing that. That was a really that type of theater was kind of popular. I remember actually Peter Gabriel was influenced by that type of theater mm-hmm. for his early Genesis shows.
Danny came back from France. He had worked with a group called the Grand Magic Circus of Paris or France. That was completely. He played violin, and I think it was a drummer and a bass player,
mm-hmm.
And they accompanied just wild theatrical stuff. And he brought that sensibility back when his brother brought him back and led us through all that.
Well, it obviously. I mean, like you said, the diversity of styles. It definitely influenced the diversity of your writing and stuff because you take everything. And I have a clip later that we'll play later that kind of shows some of the humor and stuff that you're playing. But let me ask you right now, let's take a break and talk a little bit what you brought in today. This is you. How long have you had this Strat?
Oh, and then
oh, he has this great pedal board, which I took pictures of. So I want you to kind of go through this a little bit.
Well, the Strat's custom shop. I got it in the late to middle 90s. An engineer, Bobby Fernandez, that we were recording orchestra with, had a lead on two of these custom shop Strats that had gone out somewhere mm-hmm. And returned. So he brought him into the studio, and I just said, I want it. And so he has one, and I have one. And it changed how I played on with Boingo completely. I'd always been a Gibson guy before that. And this was the first Fender that didn't feel like a baseball bat or didn't respond mm-hmm. poorly. I had a really bad experience with the Telecaster when I was younger.
Oh wow.
it was a bad Telecaster, that's why. It wasn't, you know. So this one kind of changed my And my
Now you have you, those aren't the stock pickups.
Well, I had actually for years, probably on that record, it was just the lay sensors that came with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was lay sensors, and it had a mid-range boost switch, which I used incessantly mm-hmm. on stage whenever it came to needing to cut through the band. I kicked mm-hmm. that thing in, and it worked great. But after the band, I mostly was sitting in front of a computer screen, and all I got was every time I was close. So I believe I went to the bass amp store for some reason, the bass store.
The Bass Exchange?
The Bass Exchange.
Yeah, we've had them on. They're great guys. They know their stuff.
Yeah, they did. And I said, well, I forget, I was repairing something else. And I said, well, you know, I got this problem with the thing. And then, so they sold me these pickups, and I think they're SUHRs?
Sures.
And they have a whole shielding, mm-hmm. and I can shield it and unshield it. But
now you have a switch. Now you have a little toggle switch between the two tone controls.
Yeah. That just kicks in the shielding or not. So if I don't want to use the shielding, if I feel it's wrong, it kicks out. It used to be the mid range boost that I figured I didn't need it sitting in front of a computer. Because
mm-hmm.
at that point, I hadn't played live for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got split pickup.
Now, tell us the amp that you're using. You're using the speaker in a Princeton, but you're using a different head.
Yes. This I discovered only 2 or 3 years ago. There was an article in one of the magazines about a little tiny amp called an Eintz, which was a 5-watt amp made by this company, Palmer. And that's really cool. It's really cheap, and it got great reviews in an English, one of those English magazines, Sound on Sound or whatever. So I sought it out, and then I saw, oh, they have this thing. It's called a Dry, which has three separate 5-watt tube amps in it, and they are completely separate, but they sum at the back, which I've told is very difficult to do without problems. I you know, you watch the little thing on the internet, and I sought it out and played it at the NAMM show where they, mm-hmm. they had one, and I convinced the guy to sell it to me. They had to take it back east, and then they sent it out to me, and I've been using it mostly ever since.
So it has the one of them is a 6V6 or 6L6.
Well, there's both. There's the EL
34?
Yeah, the British tube. That's how mm-hmm. tech savvy I am. But and one's a 6V6 and one's a 6L6. So you can either use one or the other, or you can sum them up and get a 15-watt amp.
Mm-hmm. So you can actually mix the power yes. stages to get
yes.
a blend of the yeah. like the punch of the 6L6 and right. the tonality of the EL or the sweetness of the 6V6.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a very, very cool little guy, and it's got a small wattage, so I mean it's convenient for studio work.
Yeah, I use it in my studio all the time, and I use it. It's actually powerful enough. The other guy I play with, Ira Ingber, uses a Deluxe, which I love his sound because it always cuts through.
Right.
But the two of us manages to balance his Deluxe just right. fine in a live situation.
Now, in the studio, what do you use for a cabinet for that?
I've actually got two that I use. One is I have a Marshall 212. Not Marshall. Matchless. Matchless 212 cabinet that was my cabinet for on stage with Boingo for 3 years. Yeah. Dan and I both got Matchless amps, I forget what year. It was around Dead Man's Party.
Oh, okay.
It was quite a while ago.
So you went from Boogie to Matchless?
I went back and forth. I used them both on stage for a mm-hmm. while. I used on some of the bigger places, I'd always have an amp aimed at me from the side mm-hmm. so I wouldn't be playing too loud right at the sound man. I found that if my guitar was too loud, even if it was at my feet where you don't hear it, if it was aimed at the sound man, that I wouldn't be in the side fills. I wouldn't be in the house. I'd be here, but nobody on the sides could hear me play.
Mm-hmm.
So I started putting my amp on the side, aimed at me, so I heard myself as a monitor, and then the one that's mic'd was behind me and at a moderate level, and that seemed to help that.
Oh, okay. No, that's pretty cool. So what was the other cabinet besides the matchless that you used for studio?
At home, I think it's a KLK, and it's just got two Celestions in it. One's a... And I have them wired separately so I can do it stereo, 112.
That's a KL?
KL.
KL's cabinet?
KLK? KLH?
Oh, KLH?
Is that a company?
Well, KLH I thought was a hi-fi speaker.
No, because...
KRK?
KR? No, it's not KRK.
Okay.
It's just some guitar.
It's K something.
Yeah, it's just some big...
That's cool.
It's a big, it looks like a fake Marshall, but it's got 212s in it, Celestians.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually use at least one, or if I use stereo, I use them both. Yeah. And either through this top, or I still have my Groove Tube Trio. It's just called a Trio. Groove Tube Trio with a... Seymour Duncan power amp.
Seymour, and then is that a low wattage amp?
No, it's a big stereo made for.
Oh, okay. Well, I noticed that you brought in the Princeton. Have you ever used the Princeton? Is that Princeton?
Actually, that was my main amp when I first joined Boingo. When we had
really?
the theater show, I used that mostly. I had that, and I had a Bassman that I regret giving away. I actually didn't give away. I traded and sold the top to Carol Kay in exchange for a Mesa Boogie bass top. I really regret that.
Yeah, those Bassmans are still, they're great amps. But this little Princeton, he's got a silver face Princeton that he's using. That it's a Jensen in there, 12-inch, and he's, or 10-inch.
10-inch.
Using a Jensen 10 to power the Palmer. Now, let's take a look at his pedal board, because he's got some really cool pedals on here. You have the Centaur, I noticed.
The Klon Centaur. I think the first time I got a Tone Quest magazine. Do you know Tone Quest?
Yes.
It was like whatever it was. It had an article with Nels Klein, and he said he had this, and so I went, I want it. So I love Nels Klein. So I ordered it. Took over a year to get it, and it's been kind of there ever since, in one way or another.
That's a great one. Go down the line what you have.
A
Strymon El Capitan.
A Strymon El Capitan for delays, and the cool thing about it is the wah and flutter to kind of put that in. It makes it...
With Oingo Boingo, did you use Echoplexes?
Oingo Boingo, I had Roland rack mount, and back then... it was the only thing that had presets, and a lot of the tunes had to have different... There was no tap time back then.
Yeah.
So I had to have preset delay times that were like kind of locked into what the drummer would have actually start with a click.
Was there MIDI? Was that MIDI back then? So you could lock the thing by MIDI?
It could, but it wasn't.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think you could... Those guys, I don't think you could. There was MIDI. It was right. We had DX10s.
Right.
I mean, that was DX7s. DX7s. But yeah, that back then it was. I had to have two banks of delays pre-programmed, and I had a ground control with all the
to switch to the
switch the pedals
all,
in there.
So, you had all the loops set up.
Yeah,
custom.
Yeah. It was kind
very
of a,
cool.
It was cool, but it was a pain in the ass, which is why when the band broke up and why that microwave mush was straight into the guitar, straight into the amp. A
lot simpler, just you and your guitar and
your
amp.
Yes. The drag about this down, having it down there, is that you can't, kind of the fun thing about delays is turning the knobs while you're playing.
Right, well, that's the whole thing with the Echoplex. You could overdrive it and then just let it fly.
We opened for the Police at the Forum, not to be a name dropper, but there, Andy Summers had like it was a whole bench full of these Echoplexes, and he had the guy who all he did was go and adjust it while Andy was playing. That was impressive.
Those are very That's one of the things. Well, you can kind of do that, but you'd have to have that up on. So you can reach it.
Yeah.
El Capitan, I think, does it.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Okay, what's next to the El Capitan?
This I just got. It's a ring modulator, a Moog-er-Fugger little ring modulator. And it's actually kind of cool if... If you tune it, I think I tuned it to a G. If you tune the if everybody knows what a ring modulator does, it sends in a signal and modifies your signal to make a third note. Mm-hmm. So you're not hearing the note that it's putting out, but it's adding or subtracting the frequency.
The sum or difference between the two notes.
Right. Yeah. So if you get it tuned, it actually can sound kind of musical in certain contexts.
Well, they were real popular with the synths.
Yeah, I used to have a Maestro. Mm-hmm. I still have it, but it kind of is falling apart and is real dirty. Bear, I play guitar for Bear McCreary over the years, who does TV shows and starting to do some real good movies now. And he had me using my old Maestro a lot because mm-hmm. he liked nonsense. He liked the nonsense that I like to play with chords like. And going through one of those, it becomes like this big spread of stuff. And particularly if you... And he actually had me play it through... Play my... I just found out the name of it. The Fernandez guitar with the sustainer pickup. So that you'd get a chord like that that would just keep going and go into harmonic feedback.
Well, let me play that. We're talking. You mentioned the Fernandez. We should show that to them. This is a cue. It says. I guess the movie was Rideshare.
This was a friend of mine is an animator at Disney, and he did a film right when the iPhone came out. He did the entire film on the iPhone camera.
Okay.
And it was called Rideshare.
Okay. This is he's using a sustainer on the. It's a Fernandez sustainer, FSK 401. I think.
401. I think. Yeah.
And this is very cool because he's doing totally melodic feedback. It's really, take a listen. Now, it's just the harmonic. It's really interesting how that. I mean, melodically, it works really cool.
Thank you.
and are you using two guitars? Are you having one guitar, or is that the same guitar pulling the harmonic?
Oh no, that's overdubbed. There's one guitar with all the buzz, which I am for that particular show. I embraced the buzz coming out of the guitar because mm-hmm. I felt it made it feel like a guitar. Sound like you were listening mm-hmm. to someone actually playing. The feedback I laid down afterwards, or maybe I did it before, I forget. And it was the harmonic content. And with the Fernandez, there's three settings: normal, harmonic, and a mix. Normal just gives you the octave. It'll feedback at the octave like an Ebow. harmonic start to give you either another octave or the fifth above that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you put it in a mix, it just depends on how hard you hit it, which one it goes to.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, my guess is I had it on mix for one of the takes and on just the octave for the other.
Did you amp that or was that direct?
I think those were direct.
Because it has like a bloom to it. It has a distortion, but not a, you know what I mean? It's like an amp, like a Fender amp at about 5. It has a little bit of that character. Is that just that character of that unit?
I can't remember how I did it. A lot like the goofy one. I used a VG8 direct because
that's the wah-wah stuff.
The wah-wah stuff was with a guitar. What do you call it?
The guitar
simulator.
Yeah,
the VGA is not
the Cosm one. Is it, that's the one that simulates the different amps? And
yeah, stuff. Different amps, and it had a Jimi Hendrix setting.
Yeah, it's a great wah sound, and that was the Strat.
That wasn't this Strat. It was a Strat. I have a Strat. Actually, Mark Mann borrowed my Strat for his. That's another story. but
you need them to come on the air together.
It has a pickup for.
Oh, okay.
For the VG8 that feeds it in, but it was a Strat.
Well, speaking of the goofy movie, the jazz thing you did, was that the Emperor?
No, that actually was my gold top Les Paul. Just
wow.
Into a it may have even been into that, but
in
it was just
Princeton?
Into an amp, yeah. I also have, I don't remember if I had this back then. No, I did. An amp that was given to me by Buell Neidlinger. Buell Neidlinger was a bass player, played with Cecil Taylor and a bunch mm-hmm. of jazz people, and he came out here and he was in the studio orchestras. I met him through Danny. I mean, he was on all of Danny's early sessions. And when he actually, it was very important to me. I realized in the past couple of years, he came up to me when I was having an awful time. I was conducting a piece of music that the click was varying and was mm-hmm. kind of impossible to play, and I was supposed to be leading the string section to follow this, and he just came up to me and said, just relax, we're all here for you, we all want you to succeed, we want it to sound good. And at that point my whole outlook for being in the studio completely changed, because I was thrown into the best musicians in the world, the orchestra, you know, musicians. I'm telling them what to do, and it was like really intimidating. But that moment when he told me that changed my entire outlook. Mm-hmm. But when he retired, he gave me a Fender 410 concert amp, brown.
Yeah, those are
brown.
Yeah.
And how he got it? It was given to him by Chuck
Rainey.
Chuck Rainey, who used to play on the Carpenters,
mm-hmm.
and Chuck Rainey had given him the amp because it was the amp that he recorded all the Carpenters records on, and Buell was picking up the next gig. He was playing; he played bass for the Carpenters at the end of their run, and so he gave it to me when he retired, and I actually hadn't talked to him in years, because I made this revelation recently. I called him while I was in Seattle, where he's living in Seattle now, and he said, "Well, are you still using the app?" And I said, yeah, because I use it in the studio. And he said, well, when you're done with it, make sure you hand it off to somebody else who deserves it. It was just like, anyway, so I have that amp, and that may have been the amp I used on the Goofy movie.
Oh, wow, because that's a great, that's a nice tone for jazz tone. It gets that sound.
That's why I'm thinking of that, because the speakers in there were...
They had to be Al Nico.
They had huge magnets.
Yeah, they're probably the old Al Nico. Yeah. I don't know who made them. They might have been Oxfords or Jensens, but Jensens made an Al Nico that was a real.
I think
mellow.
It was. I think they were Jensens.
Were they?
I think they are.
Did they have like the blue sticker, or were they Bluebacks, or did they have? You don't remember?
I was going to go take pictures of all my stuff because I knew these questions were...
No, you have to take a picture. We have to see what they are. But yeah. They were... No, that tone is just great. That's just really...
I'm thinking that's what I used for that.
Well, let's just go briefly right down the line and finish up the title. We got on a tangent, which was great. But it's...
For Boingo, the 80s stuff, I always had some sort of phase shifter, I think. Mm-hmm. I had the old, this one I found early, Dimension C by Boss. Mm-hmm. And it only has four buttons. You have four choices. Number three is the one I usually choose because it's subtler.
Got a nice flange sound.
I end up having that on a little bit.
That's a cool sound. What's the green one?
The green one I found a couple of years ago while I was in Michigan. It's a guy named John Cusack who I met him on the phone. I have one of those ZVEX wah array that has a bunch of things where you can set the size of the wah, but it didn't have any tap time. And what this John Cusack specializes in is modifying things so you can add a tap time. But I found this in a store in Michigan that has his name on it, and I can't think of the name of the song though. Still, the Led Zeppelin song. That I actually used to hate when
so
I heard it.
It's an octave.
It adds an octave and a fuzz.
No, I know it. I can't think of the name of the Zeppelin song, but I know what you're talking
about. Yeah, if I could remember the line, but I'm actually really bad.
I just know the drum thing.
Right.
Because it's a big drum. And then what's the one next to it, the black one?
The black one, this is actually kind of new. I used to use a thing called a Timmy, which just a preamp that my friend Ira Engber turned me on to, that it's the kind of thing that it's all you really need.
I know Ira.
Mm-hmm. You know Ira. All you really need is this little Timmy. It was originally a Tim, and the name is from a Monty Python movie reference in the middle of the Holy Grail. I think they talk about Tim. And I used it as my general, just give me a little buzz around the tone before I go off to the amp. Mm-hmm. But then I tried this, and I kind of liked it. It's a fake Z drive. Z amplifiers. Mm-hmm. So it's got the electronics of a Z amplifier, mm-hmm. one with Germanian and one of them with the other kind of. Now I'm showing my ignorance.
Well, the regular IC chip.
Yeah. So. And the nice thing about it is when you roll it off, it cleans up pretty well. So I can get some control here, which I usually generally. Play with this half.
So you move. You use your volume control a lot on the guitar.
Thank you. They couldn't see my hand moving. Yeah.
Yes.
And then it's got. Then this thing I just found the other day, it's a light compressor and sustainer.
Okay.
Which,
who makes it?
It's called Forest. Mad Professors makes it. And I forget how I found it, or it may have been from a Tone Quest, but once I tried it, I kind of liked it. That's without. So it also responds if you pick lightly, it kind of gets out of the way. But it keeps, because it's a compressor, it keeps the level up even.
Keeps your tone more consistent.
Yeah.
And then you have the orange one's a tremolo?
Yeah, it's a tremolo. I actually just put that one back. I'd been using a thing by a company named Flux, which I sought out because the Flux, when you hit tremolo, it starts, the beat starts with you. Every other one, there's a sine wave going. And wherever you start, it's in the middle of it. So the Flux does that really well. You hit it, and it starts where you start. So you can do it on beat. The drag about the Flux is I don't quite understand all the controls. So it has like some waveform, some other stuff that in a live situation when I'm just like, I gotta hit something, I would hit the wrong thing I have to spend time with it before I can use it live. This I can use live because it's just, it does tap tempo and it starts the tremolo.
So it's just a standard type of
I mean, it's got three or four, it's got sine wave, it's got square wave, different
So it's more versatile than a standard tremolo.
It has a bunch of things, and you can have it add distortion too if you want to when you hit it. It tapped either tap tempo or you can set it. And there's a ratio so that you can have it so it goes, so that there's a space between each onset. Mm-hmm. So it'll go up and down, up and down, up and down, rather than evenly.
Right.
So you can make it do that kind of stuff.
It's not exactly a square, but I remember we used to have that on a synthesizer, like the Art, where you had like a delayed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a pulse.
Oh. Yeah. Pulse. So it could do, that's cool. That's an interesting sound. So it gives like an echo. That's the pulse mode.
Forgot how to turn it off. There. Okay.
So yeah, that can come in handy. It can kind of fake an echo.
Yeah.
Which comes in handy if you're doing like little syncopated things. That's very cool.
I'm trying to think. Sorry, it's not working right.
Now
I'm not using it right.
Remember, too, next week this will be different because you will change it. So,
no, you put it in its case. Mm-hmm. All the settings change anyway. There's one company, Black something, that I got a pedal, and they, all the settings are screws. Mm-hmm. It's like kind of a pain in the ass to do thing on the fly, but you stick it in.
Once it's done, it doesn't get
messed around every time you move it around.
Well, I told you this would go by fast. We're already done. It's like,
oh, good.
I have to have you come back at least another four times. I don't think I can cover everything all at once, but I do want to thank you for coming on, and everybody, check out. And you know I think the latest thing that you did was the Danny stuff was the last Alice in Wonderland, right?
No, actually, we just did Girl on the Train.
Girl on the Train.
Girl on the Train. Alice in Wonderland. We did something before that. I don't remember.
Yeah, but anyway, just check out the Batman score that he did, and both of the Alice are great. A lovely orchestration.
And if you're in, we've been playing at Ireland's 32 about once a month. A band called Jackie O's.
Jackie O's, yes.
Ira Amber and me.
That's Ira, who's been asking me to go to.
Ira, David Raven.
David Raven and awesome. John Avila.
Yes,
whose bass playing is just totally. That, all the musicians are just wonderful to play with.
And there's no cover.
And to check out more about Steve, www.stevebartek.com. And there's a lot of stuff in there. I mean, we just got a little bit into his background. There's a lot of different things that he's done over the years. And it's just amazing. I mean, your diversity just blows me away. I'm going to leave us with a clip of it's another part of the Goofy clip, but I like it because it has a lot of sense. He kind of just plays, he just kind of not distorts the guitar, but he kind of does some interesting things, and it's really humorous. It's a great piece. And
I do have a sense of humor.
Yes. Well, actually, the cue's called Off to College. So real quick, anything that you want to say about it?
It was the last thing I did for the movie, and it was just a quick one or two takes, and I had to get it done and move it off.
Okay. Thank you so much, Steve, and Lori, as always, thank you for being
absolutely.
On coming and visiting us. Everybody, have a great week, and we will see you next week. And here's Out to College.